as a result of the last series on vision and grasping the deeper importance of being spiritually alert and on guard as we covered in that particular series. I also hope that you're seeing more clearly the power of the thunders that are increasing in magnitude and frequency. It ought to be very powerful to all of us in God's church, and especially now you see them overlapping each other. And the more you understand that, the more you can understand how close we are to things happening, because by their increase, you can see or you can measure in part exactly where we are in time. So as a part of that last series, again, we focused on a lot of the first and third thunders. And in this new series today, we're actually going to focus in on a couple more as we go through this, and we'll talk about that a little bit later here. But I want to include a couple of the other thunders in this section here. But this sermon today, if you like titles for your sermon, is entitled The Thunder of Judgment. The Thunder of Judgment, with this being part one. And the reason it's entitled this way is because this is especially the thunders, if you look at them, has to do with judgment. Certainly the trumpets do as well, everything that we're going through. But it's a matter of the thunder of judgment and understanding how people respond to things that God does on this earth and to God, candidly. And so I'm going to read a few things here in the introduction I don't want to forget, and then we'll get into some scriptures here shortly. But again, it takes a lot to bring carnal, selfish, human nature to repentance. And we're witnessing that during this period of time. There are a lot of things, if you liken things in Scripture to the last 3.5 years especially, talking about two witnesses. As I mentioned in times past, that is what we're all doing in the church in one respect. We're all witnessing a climax of everything that's happened in the past 6,000 years brought into a tiny frame of time. To be able to understand human nature, to understand the way the world is, the way mankind is, the way governments are, the way religion is, and its impact on the world. And we're being given a great ability to see those things in a very powerful way. And we're a witness of those kinds of things. And so we're going to witness in a very powerful way how strong human nature really is. The attitudes that exist in mankind. And especially in an age of technology like we have after the past 150 years plus of the growth in technology just in the last 10 years. Now, I was thinking back to the day, Mr. Armstrong's time, because I'm also planning another sermon series before long. That is taking a lot of work and a lot of research and been a long time in coming, if I'm able to get to it. But him talking about technology and the growth that he has seen through his time and the impact it's had on human beings, on human nature, and how man misuses technology anyway. And he's discussing that in a particular context that I'll address later on. But I thought, that's amazing. And he didn't even have the internet. He didn't have the internet like we have today, where you can go to Google or Yahoo or whatever, Bing or whatever's out there and type in a word and all of a sudden you have all kind of stuff in front of you. He didn't live in that particular age. I remember at the time of the apostasy taking place that one of the big things the ministers were concerned about, was take away certain things from them, but don't take away my AOL account or whatever account it was, the church account, the email account, I guess it was. It was kind of a joke. In one respect, because you get tied into people of, it was a technology that was new to us in the ministry, in the church, in the world in that respect. And we'd look back 15 years ago and we don't realize how much the world has changed just in the area of communication and how people keep in touch with each other. And it truly is incredible. And so we're seeing these things at the end time in a very powerful way, things that are misused by mankind and the human nature that goes along with it. And we're a witness of those things and of the judgment that God has finally brought to this earth after 6,000 years, or nearly 6,000 years. And so again, it takes a lot to bring carnal, selfish human nature to repentance. You know, you look back in time, and that's why I marvel sometimes too when you look at the history of mankind and the sense of those with whom God has worked. And in the first 4,000 years, there weren't that many people. And God worked with people individually. He would call an individual. He would mold and fashion an individual. He would work with them in life. Abraham comes to mind and Sarah quickly, how he worked with them for so long. I think of David, King David, and David as a young person, even as a child, how there are things that he understood that God was working with him and preparing him for. He didn't understand all those things until later on in time, but he wrote about them in Psalms and so forth, and God worked with him in a very powerful way. But there are those two times in the first 4,000 years that God worked with in that way. Not very many. A lot of time passed. And then time for Jesus Christ, Passover, to come and die on this earth. And things began to change. And God began to work with people in a more organized manner, in a greater way, because of the formation of the church and how God was now going to work with the church. And much more knowledge now being given to the world through Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ taught his disciples, gave them much. And so you go back and look at these things, and it truly is awesome. You go back and look at how God then began to work with far more people. And even on the first day of Pentecost there, people had been prepared for that particular day to magnify the importance of that day and what the disciples did when they were inspired by God's Spirit in a very powerful way and the miracles that took place on that day. And the people who could hear in different languages that heard Peter speak as an example. And it mentions all those nations of people that said they heard him basically perfectly in their tongue. Well, he wasn't speaking 20-some languages at one time, but it was a miracle in what they heard that God performed at that particular time. And you look at all these things were taking place, but on that day it talks about 3,000 people that were convicted, moved, and became a part of God's church. And so God began to work with more people. That's why I marvel at what God's getting ready to do now. Because if you look at individuals worked with for 4,000 years, and then the last 2,000 years, the vast majority of 144,000 in the last 2,000 years, and now he's getting ready to work with millions. And the whole earth. We can't comprehend it. But it's a progressive part of God's plan, and it's an awesome thing. But whether it be individuals during the time of the church and people being called and most of us being called out of the world, we know what it's like. I will never forget my calling. You should never forget your calling. You should never forget how God drew you and called you into his church, because he chooses each person individually. He brings us to Jesus Christ. He brings us to the church. He draws us. That's why I like the one word Terry Rozek many, many years ago came across when after the apostasy had taken place, and he gave a speaking in a sermon or split sermon or something at that particular time, and talked about how that one of those words about a calling it has to do with being drug. It's like dragging you, because we don't always go easily. We don't always change easily. We don't always desire God's way of life easily, because we're fighting human nature. And so in the Greek language, there is that one word that has to do in the sense of being dragged along the way because of human nature. It's so strong, and it's so difficult to bring us to repentance. And I think of all the things I went through as a teenager to get to the point where God could work with me. And I had to have my head banged up on the side of a 4x4 several times before I'd start listening. And so it's going to take a lot from the prophetic thunders and the trumpets to bring exceptionally large numbers of people to repentance in a timely, organized fashion. And so if you can have this in your mind, again, of God working with individuals 4,000 years, and then all of a sudden that began to change and began to work with larger groups of people in an organized fashion in the form of a church, and in time, ministers being trained that could be in different areas so the church could grow even more, so that God's Spirit could work through the ministry then, teaching people Sabbath by Sabbath by Sabbath, all the things that God had revealed in a very quick fashion in the time of Christ and the disciples. Because you look at this book here, and that which is spiritual that God began to reveal through Jesus Christ in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and then you go on in through the rest of it, and what was revealed through the rest of the apostles at that particular time of their life and where they were. Incredible knowledge it was given so that God could work with, in a very powerful way, larger numbers of people at the same time. And he's getting ready to magnify that mightily. But to do so, he's not just going to call a few into the church this time. He's changing the whole world so that hundreds of thousands, millions can be worked with, and God's kingdom can work in a new period of time in a very powerful way. And so if you have that vision, because so much is about vision, the ability to see what God is doing, the ability to see what he's done in the past, in the first 4,000 years, then the next 2,000 years of the church, and what he's getting ready to do now is beyond our understanding, but we can strive to appreciate it and believe what God says and grasp it to a point. And it's inspiring. And so again, it's going to take a lot from the prophetic thunders and trumpets to bring exceptionally large numbers of people to repentance in a timely, organized fashion. Yet that's exactly what God is doing. And it's inspiring. This world, right now, is so typical of the haughtiness, the arrogance, the pride, the ego, and utter contempt that mankind has of God and toward God. To them, God isn't even in the picture, except in a distorted, perverted manner, by their own ideas and beliefs that suit them and their intentions and their will. It's not a matter of God's will. It's a matter of, just like in this country, basically, it's the church of your choice. You know, whatever you choose, whatever is closest to your thinking, whatever you kind of get along with a little bit better, it's not a matter that there might be one way of life and only one way of life that mankind is to live that's without confusion, which is going to become important in this sermon here, that's void of confusion because it's one way, you know, inspired by God, given to mankind, one way of life to live, laws that mankind is to live by. And yet, mankind has this concept, and the way he grows up and so forth, of choosing and making his own choice of whatever basically most often his parents have taught him. And then they choose that way as well. And their thinking is molded by that. What you see happening in the world today in the Middle East is because of that thinking that's been molded into people's minds. And it basically all has to do with religious ideas as well that makes it worse, where people can't get along and they can't communicate. And people have different concepts of how people think. I can barely take it watching the news right now about Egypt. And we, with all of our haughtiness and pride and ego here in this country, are telling other people how they should govern themselves when we don't even understand those people. Because they think differently than we do here in this country. And of course, we crawled into God's church and we learned to think differently than this country too. But anyway, people think differently around the world. They truly do. Like the time that President Bush talked about Putin and basically saw a friend of someone he could trust. I think, you don't know him. He doesn't think like you do. He may smile and he may shake your hand, but he doesn't think like you. And he has different plans and ideas for his country. And we're just in the way. Anyway, incredible how people think and how they think toward God. And so to them, speaking of the world that's filled with haughtiness and pride and arrogance and contempt, utter contempt toward God, and God isn't even in the picture again unless it's in a perverted manner about their God and what their God is going to do and how their God is going to perform and accomplish certain things on the earth. What the Muslims believe, Sharia, law, how they think, what they think is going to have to cover the whole earth in time, is very strong. Christianity has a different concept. Judaism, amazing, has a different concept of governing the earth and how things are going to take place in time. And people are motivated by that kind of thinking. And how it best suits them, because, again, people are incredibly selfish by nature. Leaders, they can't help it. It's the way of mankind. It's just the way people are. And it takes so much to bring people to repentance before God. That's why we're going through the things we are, and that's why the thunders will continue to increase in magnitude and overlap each other and become louder and louder and louder the farther we go. And as trumpets come along, those will become very loud and deafening to people as time goes forward. And all these things have to happen because there is absolutely no other way that mankind would ever repent if it didn't happen in the manner that it's going to take place. And if we can see those things and see what's happening right now in the world scene, it should help our vision to be very sharp, truly, and our ability to be inspired and moved and motivated by the awesomeness of our calling. that God has given to us, to be moved and motivated to stay close to God and not to let up and to continue to the end. So there is no real acknowledgement by such leaders, if you will, when you're looking at the world, whether it be political, economic, or religious, that the world is on the brink of self-destruction as a whole. They may see bad times. There may be some leaders who even see world war in the future. But by no means do they think it's the end of them. On the contrary, they're going to come through it. That's why there's this one publication that if we get to in time, I don't know if I'm going to even be able to go through it. There's so much there. Talking about this country and how this country's established in a Federal Reserve system and so forth, and what is taking place right now that people as a whole in the world don't grasp, or at least in this country, don't even grasp the workings of, that there are things taking place there in such a powerful way that this one individual that does this writing, it is quite sharp. Still, his attitude, his mind is, you can still prepare and plan and come out ahead of everybody else. Because they're not planning. So if you're planning properly, you can come through this better than most people. So he sees some of what's coming, but it's always this attitude, which is one of pride and haughtiness, because it means you can hold on to your own values. You don't have to change. You don't have to change anything. And that's what has to change. People holding on to their own values and their own will so they'll come to repentance so that God can begin to work with them. Because until that happens, God's Spirit can't work with a person. You know, if you hold on to your own will, your own way of doing something, there are a lot of people who have never made it all the way, whom God gave a calling, who couldn't make it all the way because they were holding on to something they wouldn't let go. They just wouldn't let go of it. Incredible how the mind works. How much more on a massive scale in the way that God is working now to prepare a new age and a new world and a new government that's going to rule this world. So again, as a whole, there is no acknowledgement by such leaders, whether they be political, economic, or religious, that the world is on the brink of self-destruction. There is no ear turned to the warnings, or tuned into the warnings, if you will, that are thundering around them right now. Instead, from the narrow-mindedness of each such selfish and egotistical outlook, we're going to come through this temporary tough time. That's how people think. It's a temporary thing, just like the stock market. Just a temporary tough thing, and we are going to come out ahead. It seems like today it's so bad, and that ego is so great, and the pride is so powerful, that even there, when bad news comes along, it surges upward. That's how insane things are right now. There are days that I would have said in times past, if you looked at the trend of times past, it would have plunged some on particular days. Not now. There are times that almost the exact opposite happens on occasion. It shoots up. That's incredible what's taking place. And you're witnessing these things. How strong that nature is in people. That we're going to come through this. We're going to make it. And we don't have to change. Amazing. There is no fear of God. Not truly. Or of any concept of answerability for greed, lying, deception, injustice, perversion of behavior, instead only justification and self-righteousness, that we can do anything. And we're not alone in this country in thinking that way. Other peoples around the world, they think the same way. Just it seems like we have a greater dose of it. Even Glenn Beck the other day, couldn't believe it. I don't watch him on a regular basis by any measure, so don't get the wrong impression here, because I mentioned him a couple of times, like, you must just sit around listening to Glenn Beck. I can't take too much, because it's the same as others in this world and how they think, and their thinking is distorted. Yes, they may see a problem. There are different ones out here that see a problem, and they try to address it. But the reason I don't listen is because they address it from their viewpoint. They address it from their ideas of how we're going to come through all this. And that's exactly what he was covering, as he was talking about that we have to get back to some of the basic good of this country as an example, and talking about different weaknesses and problems and so forth of people, but that there is still this basic good that we can get back to again. because man can govern himself. That was his conclusion. I thought, that's the whole problem. Man can't govern himself. That's the reason we're having these problems. And so the thunder of judgment is going to become much, much louder. And right now, in this past few weeks, the beginning of this year here, it's been loud from the get-go of the year. And I hope our hearing is sharp and tuned into it, because it has a great deal to do with your spiritual well-being as well, and the fight that you're fighting. And so thunder, a thunder of judgment, because it's all about judgment, is getting much louder. And the self-will and the deep-rooted pride of mankind is going to be humbled. It's going to be brought down, and with very great power, because that's how God is going to do it. He's going to allow certain things to take place in a very timely way, as we have always understood. So that thunder now is going to grow far, far greater and quite a bit faster as we go forward. We have less than 16 months. When we were in Phoenix, 2 weeks ago now, that was the halfway mark of time, and a half a time. We're already halfway through time, and a half a time. Incredible. Look back and look when it started, and when God gave us understanding of the specific 980 days of time, and a half a time that began in trumpets of 2009. Oh, incredible. And we're halfway through it already, past it. Less than 16 months down the road here. And Jesus Christ will be on this earth. Something we believe, but we can't really comprehend. Seeing the world like it is today, I was thinking, incredible. Look what has to take place in Europe. I was reading some articles about Germany and Merkel. and Merkel is Merkel. But anyway, some of the things she's saying and over there in Germany, I wasn't picking on her when I made that statement. But anyway, just thinking about, there are a lot of things that have to take place. And they will take place. But sometimes if people aren't focused as they need to be and aren't in tune like they need to be or have the vision they need to have, they can begin to lose sight and begin to let down spiritually. So let's jump ahead all the way to the end of this time and notice the attitude of mankind that's so strong against God, because these verses we're going to go through in Revelation 18, we're going to begin there, talks about a judgment that's upon this earth and man being brought to a final judgment. And it reveals in some of this attitudes and the way people think. And you need to be able to see those and what's happening, because it makes things in the news come alive that much more, things that you are witnessing at the end of an age. And you'll see more and more a spirit, a hideous spirit, frankly, in mankind that's filled with arrogance and contempt against God, that stands firm in its place, even to the end, even to death. That's hard to understand sometimes, that there are the vast majority of people on this earth are going to stand firm in their own way, in their own pride and arrogance, even to death. Because in their minds, they are not going to surrender to anything else. They are going to come through this, and they're going to come out on top or die trying rather than change. Revelation 18, let's notice. Revelation chapter 18. And there are some things even in the midst of all this that God is showing that gives a better understanding of some things in the church, for the church, that I find inspiring and exciting, that we're going to touch upon quite quickly here in the beginning of this. Verse 1, "And after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power." And so it's taking us right up to the end, reminding us of things that got us there, as we go through this particular chapter, and we'll go back to chapter 17 later as a part of this entire scenario, if you will, of seeing what's taking place and what is happening and what will take place. And it says here, "After these things, I saw this angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lighted with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon, the great city has fallen." Or Babylon the Great has fallen, I'm sorry. But it is referred to as a city in previous verses here. And something that we need to grasp and understand what it's talking about here. It's as much as the word Jerusalem that we've learned about, the way of peace, this word here is about Satan. It's about his system. It's about his way. It's everything about him and what he's done on this earth and swayed human beings on this earth for the past 6,000 years. And this is his city. It truly is. As much as Jerusalem is God's and Jesus Christ's and what it has to teach, a way of peace, a way that produces peace. This is the word, in essence, that goes back in time about confusion. That's Satan's way. The way of confusion, indeed. And what has come out of that, which is the opposite of peace. It produces the opposite. God's way is one of order, law, unity, oneness, one way of life to be lived. Satan's isn't. It's kind of like some of this concept that people have in some of the scattered churches, that somehow we can all have a different way, all going the same direction. That somehow God's working with all of us that are scattered out there, and we don't all really agree with each other because we're staying with a particular group or organization, but we kind of have this feeling that yet he's really, really working with all of us, and one day he's going to bring us all back together. How? As one. Oh, what's that mean? Anyway, you think of the mind of people and how people think, and it's the way traditional Christianity thinks too. When it gets right down to it, people don't want to condemn others that are close to their beliefs because they don't understand. And so it's like this concept that God's really... And then that even takes on a broader view sometimes. There are people in the world who talk about it doesn't matter whether it be Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Hindu. God's kind of working with all of us in different ways because we're all so different. And really, we're all kind of... Aren't we all kind of headed the same way? Anyway, kind of mind-boggling, some of that kind of thinking, but that's what's out there. That's Satan's way. Absolute, massive confusion where people can't see through it and what it causes, what it creates. We'll see that as we go along here. So he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great has fallen, and has become the habitation, the dwelling place of demons and the hold or the imprisonment or the prison, if you will, of every foul spirit. It means impure or unclean spirit. And a cage, which is a word, that, again here, same word used earlier here, imprisonment or a prison, and the prison of every unclean and hateful bird. It's not about birds. When's the last time you saw a hateful bird, a hate-filled bird? You know, they may be hungry, but hate, filled with hate. You know, there are words that oftentimes, especially when it's not specific in a physical world, that which is in a spirit world. That's what this is about. You know, there are winged creatures. There are those that have a particular glory that God gave to them, but in a spirit world, not in a physical world. And so a description here of those who are unclean, they are impure. You know, we're not talking about physical creatures out here that don't have minds. We're talking about the beings that have minds because they're impure, they're unclean before God, and hate-filled with hate. That's how those beings have lived since the time they rebelled. They hate God. They hate God's plan. They hate anything that God is doing. To them, God is unfair about everything he does. They don't accept personal responsibility, and here's a spirit in the world. They don't accept personal responsibility for what they have done wrong. It's somebody else's fault. It's God's because he's unfair. You know? And if God hadn't done this, we wouldn't have these problems and this and that and whatever. You know? It's the way human beings think so often too, because that's what happens when people sin. And the more they sin, the more they begin to seek to justify their sin. And so it is with things shown here. A system. It is about a system that will not continue any longer. It is about a way of life that will not continue any longer. And the only thing that is left of that system are the beings who created it. And so they are themselves now in prison. They come to a time where they are prisoners. And that's all that's left of Babylon. Them. and Satan until he's taken care of, as we talked about during the feast. For all nations have been made drunk with the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And so it talks about a system and a way of life that God equates with fornication. And the reason that is done that way is because if you go back in the Old Testament, those who would not listen to God, those that God sought to work with in the world, when they wouldn't accept His ways and live His ways, instead tried to do something else, bring in a different way or a different religion or different ideas, God said that was, spiritually, that's fornication or adultery or idolatry. Some of the same words that are used in Scripture, especially in the Old Testament. And that's what is being referred to here, that it's about a different way. And so there are spirit beings who came along who began to live a different way. Satan was the first one that came along that began to practice this, a different way from God's, and began to teach a different way. And anybody who imbibed of that, drank of it, drank in of it, they themselves became perverted in their being, in their minds. And the whole world, it says, in essence, has been made to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, because it's intoxicating to human beings. It's kind of like Christmas. And you see all these pretty lights, and it's hard for little children to realize this isn't good. It's attractive. It doesn't look ugly. You know? And the idea of getting gifts and being able to go under a tree and open all these nice gifts, it's intoxicating to the world. And you just add that over and over again of things in the world, of things that are taught. And people, in their mind, in their being, become intoxicated with what they're doing, with what they're focused upon. And that's what Satan has done, like a drug that drugs people's minds and their senses to where they can't think right. Deception, because that's where it comes from, that deception, from that intoxication or fornication that it speaks of here. And so it's about Satan's way and the way he works and how people work then, because they do the same thing. They practice some of the same things, and the world learns that way then. That's intoxicating. The stock market to a lot of people is intoxicating, and it's wrong. It won't be in the world tomorrow. It's not going to exist. There won't be any NASDAQ. You know, people aren't going to bet on commodities as to where you can put your money to make money in good and bad times. Because if it goes up, you can make money. If it goes down, you can make money. It's wrong. It's a wrong system. It's filled with lies and deception, perversion, politics, and everything else that's bad. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's just like a Ponzi scheme. It really is. Just like the Federal Reserve. We're going to get to some of those things later on. That's what people are starting to call it now. You know, they picked up on that, and that's exactly what they're calling it, because it doesn't work. It isn't right. It doesn't follow right laws and right practices that God gave to mankind a long time ago. And so judgment is coming up on the world because of her practices. And as a part of that judgment, you see people resisting and fighting to the end. They're going to make it work. They're not. The world is so tied into even the dollar, let alone the stock market. They're so tied into it, their whole life is in it. Their focus is upon those things. And they're not going to let go of it easily. Think that all of a sudden they're going to change and repent and start obeying God and saying, this is all wrong. I'm going to change my life. I'm going to change how I've always thought and how I gain a livelihood. Not going to happen as a whole. That's why the vast majority of mankind isn't going to come through this. Because human nature will fight to the end to hold on to confusion, Babylon. And sometimes the more people are confused by something, the more some like it. They can make more out of it. Because if you can come along and sway them with confusing things, kind of like that, how big is that big old thing, the changes in the law having to do with health now, that they're fighting against out here. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. It's confusion. You write enough of them in there, and who can understand it? You know, people today in the medical field, they have a difficult time keeping up with all the changes that come along anyway. Anyway, it gets so frustrating out here what's happening. And you're witnessing it, you're seeing it, what's happening in this world, and how this world has been established. And so again here it says, finally, Babylon the Great has fallen. It brings you right up to the very end, because what's going to be established now? Jerusalem. The city of God. The way of peace. It comes in the form of Zion, the kingdom of God that's coming to this earth, 144,000, and Jesus Christ, who are going to rule this earth, where all government's going to come from, where everything is going to be changed through that system that's coming. And so it's the end of one way, of one system, and the establishment of a new one. One city must be destroyed in order to bring about the new one. That's what it's all about. That's what God has been doing and working at for so, so long. And so this is more. Even when we get back to the religious part, it's more than about Rome. It's more than about Europe, because some things we still haven't fully shaken that have come from Protestantism and ideas that people have, because a lot of things that people have come from taking things and the meaning of it being physical, and this isn't. So much of this, again, this goes back to a being. It goes back to Satan and what he began to do from the very beginning and the way he established, which when you disobey God and you begin to sin, it is the way of confusion that brings about every unhappiness and sorrow and misery in life, because it doesn't work. It doesn't produce right fruit. For all nations have been drunk with the wine of the wrath of her fornication, because that's where it leads to. That's what it causes. That's what it creates. Till in time, people fight against each other, people go to war. That's what it brings about in time. Because it isn't just, it isn't equitable, it isn't right. And so sometime, someplace, somebody's going to react to it because it doesn't work. And so they strike back at part of it. It's not a single system, it's not something that works right, it isn't governed by right laws, whether it be religious, economic, or political. That's why this world doesn't get along. That's why it can't get along. And so the way of confusion that's filled with pride, evil, put in their politics, because politics is filled with lying and false promises and deception. And that's how Satan works. Greed, economic chaos, all that produces the exact opposite of peace. The exact opposite. And it goes on to say here, for all nations again, verse 3, have drunk with the wine, been made drunk with the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. So again, even the leaders, those who lead people, it says they have been made drunk with this as well. So what do? They pass it along to all the people. And so the whole world becomes filled then with this same kind of thinking. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her sensuality. It's appealing. I want a piece of that. Like, you should talk about Hitler. He wanted peace. He wanted peace. Peace of Poland, peace of Czechoslovakia, and peace of, anyway. But, it's a wrong way of going about it, isn't it? Wrong way of going about it. Become rich through the abundance of her delicacies, as it has in the Old King James, but it's about sensuality, having to do with ego, power, unscrupulous wealth, how people get ahead, what people will do to get ahead, whether it be in politics or economy or whatever. Verse 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, the warning and the admonition. Especially if you look at the exact timing, it's also something we have always taught in God's church, that we're not to be a part of that system, that way. We're not to be a part of Satan's system, if you will, in the way of confusion, in the way of Babylon, in our practices, whether it be one of, we used to apply it more to religion only as a whole, because that's what we saw as a whole, because of the previous chapter that we'll go into later. But again, we are to indeed come out of the false religious system of this world, but that doesn't stop there, because this Babylon doesn't just have to do with false religious thinking. It has to do with everything in the world. Anything that's out here has to be changed. from the top to the bottom. And I hope you see that, and I hope you heard inside when you see the things that are out there, how the internet is used, how TV is used, how music is used, how politics is used, how government is used. On and on and on it goes. And you have to come to a point where you ache inside because you see every bit of it needs to be changed because it's all based on things that are wrong, not on things that are right. Everything to do with the economy and how business is done, it has to be changed because it's all based on wrong principles. And if you think some of it's fit to be saved, if time were to go on, I feel sorry for you because you'd have to learn the hard way. That's how we learn. Some things we think are good. Technology is good if it's used in the right way. In the world, it isn't being used right. Big problems because of that. Wealth is good when used in the right way. Abundance is good when used in the right way. It's because it's misused that it's wrong. Everything in the universe, you know, it's not about things that are physical anyway, but it all belongs to God, and He wants to give everything to us. But it goes way beyond that which is physical. It's not about how much gold or how much silver or it's not about those things or how much land someone has. Amazing how the human mind works. And so it says, I heard another voice saying, come out of her, my people, so that you are not partakers of her sins. So, you know, it's about sin. It's about if you practice those things, so you have to change. You come out of something, it means you're doing something different. And so that you don't receive of her plagues. Because that way brings about sorrow and hurt, because that's what sin does. It brings suffering, plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. In other words, this is all about a time of judgment has come. For 6,000 years, there was only one great period in time where God brought about judgment on all of mankind, upon the whole earth. And that was in the time of Noah, and a great flood came. We are now at another time of great judgment for the whole earth, just before the entire system has changed from one way, from one government to another, from Satan's, from man's, to God's. For her sins have reached into heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities, her sins. So this is a time of reckoning, in other words, a time of judgment that we're in. That's what we're seeing now, and how God works. A big part of this has to do with God's mercy, which is awesome, to understand how God has worked with the church, how He's worked with us, and what we're seeing in the world as well. That God wants the world to understand in time. They can't understand it now, but in time they will. We understand it. Verse 6, reward her even as she rewarded you, and twofold upon her, twofold according to her works. So this is not a small thing that's getting ready to take place in a greater and greater way. Right now, because of the kinds of attitudes that people have, because of pride and arrogance that's being puffed up even more, it makes the fall that much harder. But that's good. That's not bad. Because this very thing is the very thing that can bring people to a far deeper repentance when they maybe feel like they get to a point where they think, the possibilities there, I am going to get it back. That which I lost in 2008, I'm going to get it back, and I'm going to get more. You know, that's how people think. And then all of a sudden, when it's all taken away, and they realize, no, you're not. You thought this was going to be a long, long time in coming? They're already talking about how that unemployment, it's going to take many, many years to get things down to where they need to be. They're already looking many years into the future now, not just to one or two or a few months. And that's going to be taken away. Reward her even as she has rewarded you, and twofold upon her, twofold according to her works. In the cup which she has filled, fill to her double. And look at all the evil. In other words, God is saying, it's coming back on you. And this is the time that it's coming back, at the end time. How much she has glorified herself and lived sensuously. That system, that way. Those who have more of that have used that system in a greater way, more of the leaders who have done those things, the economists, it doesn't matter what part, religiously, you know, whether you look at religions and so forth, they have glorified themselves. How much she has glorified herself and lived sensuously. So much torment and sorrow give her, for she has said in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow. and shall have or shall see no sorrow. In other words, it's that attitude that I've been talking about. It's that same spirit and attitude. Strong pride, arrogance, and utter contempt of God, toward God. That they can do what they want to do. They can do everything according to their own self-will. That nothing is going to get in my way and destroy what I'm doing. They're going to come through it. They're going to accomplish whatever needs to be accomplished. Revelation 18 and verse 8. Therefore shall our plagues come in one day. It's an awesome thing to realize when finally God does intervene, because all the other things have been brought to a timing that God is working with and has been working with all along, and will not allow certain things to take place until they're ready in His timing for what He's doing. But finally, at the very end, on a single day, and this is what it's leading up to, the seven last plagues and everything that happened at that particular time, when God finally brings down the entire system, the entire world, because He brings to an end Babylon, and He brings to pass Jerusalem that comes with Jesus Christ and 144,000. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire. For strong is the Lord God who judges her. I've been talking about for the last couple of years that these things that are happening at the end time, we need to understand judgment, and that this is a matter of God's judgment. He's let mankind go, basically, as a whole, for 6,000 years, to have his own governments, his own religion, his own ideas. And look what we've done with it. Look at our histories, because we look at our histories. This country, we look at our history, and we're great. We know it, and we let the world know it. So much so, we try to tell people how to govern themselves and who they should have governing them or whatever it might be. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and live sensuously with her shall weep for her. Isn't that amazing? Because the more invested people are in the system, that's why God talks about not many great, not many mighty are called, because they can't be. Because to bring them to repentance, not in this age, in another age, in the great white throne after they've been dead for a time, yes, but not in this age, because of arrogance and because of pride and because of attitude that's there that is so strong, that even when the world goes through what it's going to go through as a whole, man still will not listen to God even to the end, even to their end. That's why I've talked about in times past, when it comes down to it, that's why God intervenes on the time in the exact moment He does. When China and Russia come up, and those nations from the Far East come up against Europe, and they come together one final moment in time, arrogance is so strong, pride is so strong, that rather than lose the battle, someone would push the button that would end all life on earth. They would do that. They would take that chance in thinking they still might come through it because they have enough people. There are so many people, some of us will come through this, or we're dug deep enough down on the earth we can survive this. Someone would still push that final button, and that's when God intervenes and cuts it short. It's incredible, the timing. God's in control of it. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and live sensuously with her shall weep for her. When there are those who come to understand it's being taken away from them, they mourn. They're in pain. They're in agony. No matter where they are on this earth, no matter what government is they think should come out on top, no matter what religion they think should their God should intervene, and they come to that point finally when they realize, when they understand it's not there and nothing is going to save them, and they see it being taken away, they literally weep. That's how much they don't want God. They cry for what's being taken away from them. Everything they've worked for. They can't imagine anything else. Incredible. Shall weep for her and mourn for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning or her destruction. And standing afar off for fear of her torment said, woe, woe. And this is an expression, one uses the word alas, but it's a word that means basically here, it has to do with an expression of mourning. It's like they're hurting inside and they see this destruction and they understand the magnitude of it. That great city, Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour has your judgment come. They're in pain and they're mourning for it. They're crying. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man will buy of their merchandise anymore. And you can read this and think only physically, and that isn't what it's about. It manifests itself that way in physical life because we're physical human beings. And so it comes out in the form sometimes of power, prestige, wealth, and so forth. But it's a mindset and it's a way of thinking. And the merchandise is the cunningness of it all, the deception, the lying, the ways of producing the power, the wealth that is wrong. And so they're not going to be able to practice that anymore. Why? Because one is being destroyed and a new one is being established. Babylon can't be practiced anymore. Babylon can't be practiced in the future. God's going to see to it that it's destroyed and it stays destroyed. Going to be people teaching all over the world, earth one way of life or beings in the God family, and others then who will be teaching as well from them all over the earth about a new way to live, a new way to govern, a new way to one religious belief. I mean, that is awesome by itself. And so it is the end of Babylon. And amazing how people are that they'll cry for Babylon. They would rather have that old way. And so they go out kicking and screaming just as much as Satan is doing right now. That's why he's so stirred up. What if you don't understand or don't know some things that go on behind the scenes sometimes? But as it's always been in God's church, that being, he wants to get at the church. You know who he goes after? From the top down. My wife and I, the evangelists, senior elders and their families. So he goes after, and they're fighting some big battles. But it's a way of life, and we understand that. And we know who comes out on top. That being doesn't. But it shows his attitude and spirit right now, and how things are very stirred up in the world. He's a very stirred up being, especially since the feast. Not happy. Not happy at all. 16 months, can't imagine. So thankful that being is going to be put away forever. Well, just a little time he gets out. But he won't cause much of a problem. He'll become a vacuum cleaner for just a little while to help clean up a little bit at the end. And then his job's over. Finished. Can't wait. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man will buy of their merchandise anymore. People aren't going to buy into it anymore because truth is on the earth. God is going to show the flaws of every part of the system, of what's wrong in politics and governments and false religions and wrong economic practices. He's going to reveal all those things to people so they'll understand what right laws are and what right laws produce. And they'll understand the error that mankind has done over the past 6,000 years in ignoring God. And so they'll be filled with the light, the truth of God's way of life. And so these things here will be clearly seen and they won't be practiced anymore. Nobody's going to buy into it anymore, buy of her merchandise anymore. Till the very end, a few will be deceived. Babylon will try to rear its ugly head, but God's not going to let it only go so far. So let's zero in on the process that's been building in this end time period, as there is much to learn concerning what has happened, what is happening now, and now built up to the very end here, if you will. In the midst of all this, again, attitudes of people, because it's all a part of the story. Revelation here is all a part of the story and understanding attitudes of people and how people think and understanding where the battle is. It's in the mind and how people think. So I want to go back over a few things here just as a bit of a history here again and talking about some things here that we've gone through. I think of the process we go through. And every time I go into this and look at some of this, it's really quite dumbfounding. The more and more we think about it or focus upon it and see what has transpired and see what is transpiring now, I think about attitudes, even in the world, to a point, to a small degree. We're being humbled toward the end of 2008, especially in the time of the opening of the seventh seal. Just before that and after that, there was an attitude adjustment somewhat in the world. People were shaken a little bit because of what was happening with the economy and savings that people had. Because when your life is invested in something, when you are planning on something for your future or your retirement, and all of a sudden you see a bunch of it just going, being erased from the books and disappearing, it had a sobering effect on people. And we saw the things that happened that began to have a rippling effect then in the economy, certain things that couldn't survive it with the motor, the auto companies, some things in the financial institutions, things to do with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? I've got that right. Didn't sound right when it came out. But anyway, different things of that nature that just couldn't be hidden anymore and had to come out into the open. And so people were humbled a little bit. And candidly, that's when God used that period of time to begin to draw more people into the church because of that process, that sobering process where hearing can be sharpened up just a little bit more and people can have a little bit more fear in them and thinking, well, maybe it is. And this sense that God's going to give the world a whole lot more here before long now as we go forward, this sense of something's wrong in the world and fear that begins to mount in the hearts of people. God's going to use that to bring people into the church as they see things taking place on the earth. And so it happened in a small way, in a way that is just enough to give us ability to see how it works and learn from that process, and for the church to do what it needs to do to become ready. Because that helped us in a very powerful way to give us the prod we needed to prepare for something greater later on. Without it, we wouldn't have made the kind of changes we did, and we wouldn't have been able to see, because God used that to help us to see. One of the big things God helped us to see because of that, the ordination of women, the curse, things that needed to be changed, that go all the way back to the beginning, that are awesome in what God has revealed to us. And so again, going on, then during God's time of mercy, and I hope you know what that is. I hope you understand the meaning of that, God's time of mercy, up to the Feast of Trumpets in 2009, because there was a period of time that God gave to us to understand something in a very powerful way, a time of mercy that God used to show us how He is working and how He's always worked with mankind. And how He's going to work with mankind even at the end of an age. Man is still going to have to meet judgment. But God's doing it in a very merciful way, truly. And so He gave that period of 280 days to grasp what a time is. To give understanding of a period called a time. Time, time, and a half of times. And began to help us to understand how He's working with the end time, and candidly, how He's working with the church. And so during this time of mercy, up to the Feast of Trumpets in 2009, things remain somewhat consistent as worries continued over economic conditions. But during this time, the rest of the world was not being hammered in any fashion or form by thunders, except for number one. Some of it was still continuing on because of Iran and Iraq. But you know what? After a time, you know what happens to people? They become oblivious. They don't hear it anymore because the sound has been there for so long. They don't even hear it anymore. When we were leaving in Cincinnati yesterday, a bunch of people, because our gate was at the very end where the windows are at the very end of the terminal, rather than on the sides where some of the areas are for getting on the various gates. But this gate was at the very end where it's all glassed in. And all of a sudden, all these people were going up and looking out the window and wondering what on earth happened out there. And it finally hit me. I'll bet that it's an individual that has been killed in the war and they have an honor guard out there. Sure enough, that's what it was. Soldier coming home dead. And I thought, what a waste. What a horrible, horrible waste in life. It's a powerful tool that God used to help call me. When back during the Vietnam War, had a friend that I grew up with in school that got shot in the head, Vietnam. And I had a difficult time with it because I thought, what a horrible, horrible thing. He didn't get to experience things of life, and his life was cut short. For what purpose? And there was a period of time because of that war over there, I wanted to become a pilot because I wanted to go over and kill as many people as I could. I didn't want to do it with a machine gun. I wanted to do it with something more powerful. Thought, if you're going to fight, let's do it all the way. And then God, because of that incident that happened there and several of the things that happened, God began to show me that's not the answer. So the mind had to be adjusted a little bit, and so it was. But that part there became far more convicted of through time. War, fighting, killing is such an evil thing. And that which has been on this earth for 6,000 years is people strive to get their way because their way is right. Their way is just. And anyway, I thought, I know there's a lot more destruction coming, but I thought, what a horrible thing. Different people in different parts of the country, wherever it is, they have someone coming home in a casket. And they get an honor guard. And what does that mean? What do you have to hold on to? Amazing. Anyway, sad world. And so again here, I think of that thunder from number one and how people are dull of hearing. And they don't even bother to listen to people dying in wars, in Colombia, in fighting in Mexico, in fighting in different places in Africa and in South America as well, in different parts of the world, in skirmishes in Asia, of people being killed, people dying because of wars, into the thousands and tens of thousands. We hear about numbers on a one-sided plane, not even in some of the ones who are working together with us as a whole. You have to hunt for those numbers if you want them from some of the coalition. Every once in a while we hear about our numbers here. We don't hear about the numbers of others, let alone on the other side, and families and people that suffer and civilians that have nothing to do with it whatsoever, people that die. Anyway, we become oblivious to those things. We don't even listen anymore. Incredible what takes place and how we think. And I still go back to that one that every once in a while that blows my mind. 40,000 plus people die on the highways, half of them because of drugs and alcohol, and who cares? Where is the voice of outrage, of changing things in the world? Sick, sick world. Man is sick, I'll tell you. But anyway, this has to do with the mindset and how people think and what God allows. And God backs away to a degree, to a point. I think of, was it 2009 and even into 2010 in part, I think of all the hurricanes. It's like they can't touch us and they go off someplace else. Why? Why do some things happen in a certain way at certain times? It has to do with the mindset of people and what they trust in and how they think and what God is allowing for a purpose and for a reason. Incredible. And so again, at this time, at this period of time that I specifically mentioned here, up to the Feast of Trumpets in 2009 and up to the time when God showed us this as the beginning of time and a half of times and some of the things were taking place before and after that, basically, only the church was able to hear number 6 and number 7 because of what God was continuing to give to the church in truths and understanding and those things that were ringing out that strengthened you, but not to the world, not to people around. And then before the first period of half a time had ended, before that was over with, the world was slammed with powerful thunder and over 300,000 people lost their lives due to earthquakes, weather, and the terror of war. Actually, that number is a lot higher. Because Haiti has upped its number now, I think, was it 316,000, they said, at the anniversary here that was just in January. And the numbers of people that are killed in wars and fightings, it's hard to find. You can find statistics on the U.S. and the coalition and so forth. Sometimes you can find a little bit here and there about different ones, civilians and so forth, that have died in certain countries. But as a whole, in different skirmishes in the world, people don't even count it anymore. It's amazing. Or at least I can't find them out there. Where they are. So, talking about numbers, much, much higher. But in that short period of time, you look at the numbers of people that died. Very powerful. I want to go back and read about what it says here in the second thunder. because of where we are in time and what has taken place in times past, and then the lulls that we see, and then that sound coming back again because of what God's doing. I want to read about number two here, because we already zeroed in number three and number one, and I want to read all four of these before we get through these particular two series here. Starting out in the book here, the second thunder. There's another rumbling that's been increasing in intensity over the past couple of years. It is the direct result of a marked increase in destructive power being unleashed by the earth itself. The second thunder is the increasing destruction generated by earthquakes. Over a period of only 2 years, there have been over 400,000 deaths from earthquakes, with several million people being misplaced, additional millions being displaced or when those things happen. Going on here, it says the 2004 Indian Ocean earthquake, known by the scientific community as the Sumatra, I don't know how to pronounce this one, but I think it's Andaman earthquake, was an undersea earthquake that occurred on December the 26, 2004. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the earthquake and its tsunami killed more than 283,000 people, making it one of the deadliest disasters in modern history. The greatest destruction and loss of life from earthquakes is the direct result of collapsing buildings or the power unleashed in the form of a tsunami. Volcanoes are also associated with earthquakes. All these things will continue to wreak havoc on man and nature in an ever-increasing magnitude as we approach the very end of this age. All seven thunders will increase in power and recognition, and I might add here, just putting it in here, but it needs to be said mainly at this point, moment in time here before 2008 and 2009, basically by the people, those that, with whom God is working. But anyway, all seven thunders will increase with power and recognition over the next 2 years from the date of the printing of this book and on into the final 3.5 years of great tribulation. The seven thunders will serve as a powerful witness that the words of this book are true and that they are from the God of Abraham, the Father of Jesus Christ. So again, number two, earthquakes, volcanoes. And so nothing has taken place or nothing took place until a point in time there, just in one period called a half a time. I guess really half a time here, because the half a time from September of 2009 when it began to February, and I don't remember the exact date, but incredible power that was unleashed during that period of time. And I don't know if any of you ever watch those things, but I check on it on a regular basis. One of the things I look at, just see what's happening on the earth. And it's amazing some of the rippling effects of things that are taking place that they talk about out there that they don't understand. They've never seen anything. And of course, you can't go back too far in time to have statistics anyway to show what has happened from one age to another, because they didn't have this kind of equipment to test things on the earth. But anyway, from what they have seen from since it's been there, things are happening that have never happened before. And some areas are things are, I think, what was it, the Madrid fault that's in the middle part of the U.S. here, different contains up in several states there, and some of the earthquakes that have taken place here in the last few years that haven't been taking place before that to the magnitude they are. But, you know, horrible times that have to take place when they do come that have to shake people. And it's just a part of what has to, of the overall picture. But going on here, the only way for mankind again to be humbled is for catastrophic events that must come to pass. Otherwise, mankind simply becomes more embedded in his own stubborn pride as people fight to hold on to their own right, to their own way, that they're going to come through it all, no matter what it is. It's like football. I think of an article here I just read, was reading this morning here. But it's like football, that even a fight to the end, of course, this is a big football weekend, but, you know, each side wants to win out. So even like in a game, I was looking at this one article here that talked about the Federal Reserve being like, what they're doing right now is like a Hail Mary pass. I don't know how many of you know what the Hail Mary play is, but it's like this is the last thing, this is the last chance you have. And of course, Hail Mary has to do with the Catholics. And it's like a final prayer. You shoot up in the air and hope that this final thing is going to win you the game. And it's kind of bad when that happens to your economy. And the thing you try is like a Hail Mary play, but it shows the attitude of people and how people think, and that's what you need to make sure doesn't escape you. I want to read something here that, where did I find that? Don't let me lose my phone. Yes, I want to read this to you. There are several articles here, and I'm going to take time to do this, even though I hate going through some news articles, because it's out there, and you can look for it. But I think sometimes it's good for everybody to hear it, because not everybody has the ability to find these or has a network where different ones are sending it to you. But I want to read this to you about 2010. Kind of an interesting article. It says, 2010's world gone wild. Quakes, floods, blizzards. Because sometimes when things happen in the intensity and the repetitiveness in which they do, sometimes we become hardened to it. Sometimes our hearing can become dull. And quite candidly, just like the sermon we went through in Vision, you can't let that happen to you. And thinking that if this is just the way it is day by day, especially right now with everything happening. And in a while, if you're not careful, what's happening in the Middle East, you'll become dull in your senses too, like many in the world will. It'll happen to people where they're going to take their eyes off of it. They're going to get tired of hearing this day after day after day, week after week. And after a while, even the news gets tired of reporting it. They're going to want to report something different and make it sensational. In this article here, it says, this is 2010. Earthquakes, heat waves, floods, volcanoes, super typhoons, blizzards, landslides, and droughts killed at least 250,000 people in 2010. It just seemed like it was back to back, and it came in waves, said Craig Fugate, who heads the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency. It handled a record number of disasters in 2010. The term 100-year event really lost its meaning this year. In other words, comparing things to 100-year event, and something just went past that, and it just was used so much that it became meaningless. Even though many catastrophes have the ring of random chance, the hand of man made this a particularly deadly, costly, extreme, and weird year for everything from wild weather to earthquakes. Now, some people want to blame everything on global warming or some other thing, and certainly there are things happening in the world, but so much is man-caused, there's no doubt about it. But some of the ideas that people have, it just isn't that. There are many things working together, just as many trumpets work together, many thunders work together. All these things work together to bring about specific things in the end time. Another part of this article, it says, in the summer, one weather system caused oppressive heat in Russia, while another caused flooding in Pakistan that inundated 62,000 square miles, about the size of Wisconsin. And what's happened in Australia now has made that look like a bit of a picnic, you know, in Pakistan because of the area that that particular flood covered. That single heat, and I'll guarantee you, people up there in that part of Queensland thinking a little bit differently than most of us do right here in the United States right now. Because we have snow and we have ice and winter's here and it's nasty and we get tired of it. But we're people as a whole out here in the community, they aren't thinking about what's happening. Is the thought of the end time as a whole, it is not in their mind. But I'll guarantee you there are people shaken up right now in parts of Queensland because of what's happening to them. Because of their livelihood and things being taken from them and things that they're experiencing with the kind of flooding that's taking place there. And then this massive hurricane that thankfully didn't do more than what it could have done. Very powerful. I don't know how many of you saw that on the news and saw the magnitude of that thing that came down on that northeastern corner of Australia. The magnitude of it was awesome. You know? And so they're getting pounded up there. And that's the Queensland area, just one region alone. And so this one here, it talks about in this article here about Pakistan that inundated the area the size of Wisconsin. That single heat and storm system killed almost 17,000 people. More people than all the worldwide airplane crashes in the last 15 years combined. So people use different statistics to try to show how great some things are that people don't think about. Going on, the excessive amount of extreme weather that dominated 2010 is a classic sign of a man-made global warming that climate scientists have long warned about. So this is their idea and their solution, just like people trying to figure out why the different birds died in different areas. Well, there are different reasons. They're not all the same reason. It's not all freezing. It's not all, especially when you get down in Vietnam and some of these places. And anyway, going on. They calculate that the killer Russian heat wave, setting a national record of 111 degrees, would happen once every 100,000 years without global warming. So it's all the cause of global warming. Anyway. Going on, that's why it goes on here in this article a little bit later. It says, that's why the people who study disasters for a living say it would be wrong to chalk up 2010 to just another bad year, because they see that things aren't normal. But the only answer that most people, or a lot of people, can come up with is it has to be related to something that is solely scientific and only something that their mind has to do with this change of global warming that's taking place that man has caused because of the ozone layer or whatever it is going on. Flooding alone this year killed more than 6,300 people in 59 nations through September, according to the World Health Organization. In the United States, 30 people died in Nashville, so you remember some of that flooding that took place. You know, people forget about those things that happened. And time goes by and people forget. They don't think about it anymore. And it goes on to talk about inundated countries include China, Italy, India, Cambodia, and Chad. Super Typhoon Megi, I think that's how you say it, with winds of more than 200 miles per hour, devastated the Philippines and parts of China. Through November 20th, it said 260,000 people here, but there's 360 with what Haiti added to their list there. People died in natural disasters, and they think there's a whole lot more still. Natural disasters in 2010 compared to 15,000 in 2009. So 2009, there wasn't much that happened in these areas, but all of a sudden, it's picked up. And you need to be aware of it. And not let it, because it continues to happen over and over again, that this is the way it's always been. Going on in the article, it says, how weird. A volcano in Iceland paralyzed air traffic for days in Europe, disrupting travel for more than 7 million people. And all these things added together time and time again. Another thunder that has to keep in your mind is what it's doing to the economy. Everything that happens out here has to do with what is happening to a world and a system that is already plagued, that is hurting mightily, that's trying to keep above board, that's struggling to do so. And everything that comes along adds another nail, if you will, to a coffin. It's like what's happening over there right now in Egypt. And talking about the article today coming across on the system there was about food prices and oil shooting up, you know. And now they've blown up, or they think they've blown up, this particular gas line that going out of Egypt into Israel and Jordan. And these things just continue to go on and on. And if you choke off, there's no end to it, to a world that's hurting economically. But they're fighting to keep it alive, as we're going to see as we continue in this series of here and some more articles as we have to read. Because, again, the things you need to see, what's happening and why it's happening. And I hope you don't get tired of it, okay? Because sometimes we can listen to things and think, well, yeah, I've heard that in the news. But, again, it's a matter of a focus and a vision you need to have. And you can't get tired of it. Going on. There was not much snow to start the Winter Olympics in a relatively balmy Vancouver, British Columbia, while the U.S. East Coast was snowbound. Weird things. Weird. Of all places to have the Winter Olympics, surely it's going to be good up there in British Columbia. They had to make snow. Crazy. In a 24-hour period in October, Indonesia got the trifecta. I like how they say this. Of terror. A deadly magnitude 7.7 earthquake, a tsunami that killed more than 500 people, and a volcano that caused more than 390,000 people to flee. That's all they need in one day. That'll make your day, a 24-hour period. That's after flooding, landslides, and more quakes killed hundreds earlier in the year, same area. Even the extremes were extreme. Just what we read last week, the week before that, things that are happening. Even the extremes were extreme. This year started with a good-sized El Nino weather oscillation that causes all sorts of extremes worldwide. Then, later in the year, the world got the mirror image weather system with a strong La Nina, which causes a different set of extremes. Having a year with both a strong El Nino and a La Nina is unusual. Yeah, it's unusual. Weird, just like they said in the article. How weird. Incredible. Crazy, crazy world. We live in some crazy times, and we're going to continue to see some crazy things taking place out there. I want to continue on here in a section reading about the fourth thunder, because we're going to talk about some of these and some of the other articles we're going to read in the next sermon here, if we don't get some of those today. But I want to read this one to you today as well to get both of these under our belt, number 2 and number 4. That'll take care of all 4 of them then. Because these things are just going to continue to grow and become stronger and stronger and overlap each other more and more. The fourth thunder is global economic upheaval. The world is entering into a time of final upheaval for the global economy. The stock market cannot continue its masquerade of being healthy and robust while being falsely propped up by positive talk, pseudo-exuberance, and creative forecasting. And when was this written? The same thing is going on today. The same thing that led to what happened in 2008 and on into 2009 hasn't changed. It's just worse. The day of reckoning is now on the world's doorstep. And I hope you understand this is the year of collapse. Powerful. 2008, people were scared. There were people who were scared. The government was scared. President Bush was scared of what his presidency, of what might be left in his name. And they came along with this massive bailout. And there were people who were fearful of where we were and what was getting ready to happen to our economy. They really were. They were people who were scared. And look where that fear went. Just like Iraq and Afghanistan, after a while, it's just a thing that happens. It's the way it is. Incredible. The day of reckoning is now on the world's doorstep. Many deep-felt pangs of sickness will reverberate throughout the world as we draw near to a huge market crash. Some nations are already indicating a shift from dollar to euro as a better assurance for future stability. And it's still going on. It's exactly what China is doing right now. Although many in the United States scoff at such possibility, and here it wasn't too long ago, and they're saying, what was it, the one report here, if I get time to read it, I'll read it, but this think tank in Great Britain, they came up with, they said there's a 1 in 5 chance that the year is going to survive the next decade. And I thought, no, it's not. He doesn't have a chance. If you understand. Now, their concept is time is going to go on and we're going to come out of all this and the euro's not going to, it has 1 in 5 chance of making it, but we understand the end of the story is, you know, God's kingdom is coming and the euro is not a part of that kingdom anyway. But if time were to go on, Europe is not going to let the euro die. They will fight for it. Germany will fight for the euro. As a matter of fact, they will before it's over with. Some nations are already indicating a shift from dollar to euro as a better assurance for future stability. Although many in the United States scoff at that possibility, that is precisely what will happen as confidence in the dollar continues to wane. With corporate scandals and corruption on an alarming rise, not to mention a never-ending downsizing, along with a loss of confidence in a sick economy, the United States is drawing near to an economic implosion. Colorful forecasts and different management, sleight of hand trickery concerning corporate assets, yada, yada, yada. Does that sound familiar? You still hear it in the news. Things that some of these corporations are doing and have done and what they've done with some of the bailout monies and so forth, they don't change. But people wink an eye and think, oh, that's okay because we're okay now. Things are better. No, they're worse. Downsizing, other corporate gimmickry have reached the point of no return. There will be no bouncing back from the continuous greed that has nearly choked all life out of free market capitalism. Add to all these economic woes the problem of trade deficits, money manipulation, volatile oil markets, and a list of other global ailments, and you have a sure formula for global economic upheaval, the likes of which the world has never seen. The world has experienced times of great economic upheaval, but it has always bounced back in one way or another. This time, there will be no bouncing back because the world will experience a complete economic meltdown to a level which not even the hoarding of gold and silver will solve. And so that's not the way the world thinks right now. They think they're going to get it back. It's just going to be a greater fall. The stability of the global economy is on very shaky ground, so much so that even a small country like Iran is making threats that can actually help push it over the edge. This week, WorldNet Daily, it was February 3rd, 2006, reported on an unusual move from Iran. The global economy is so insecure that something this small could actually start a final domino effect. Beginning in 2003, Iran began demanding oil payment in euros, not dollars, although the oil itself was still priced in U.S. currency. I don't need to read all this, but again, It's about those very things that we've talked about. I do want to end it this one part here, but talking about some of the things that have been taking place there and the struggles different countries are having and so forth and how volatile things are. Even on the ending on this part here on number four, even China has been hinting at shifting some of its reserves from the dollar to the euro. There is much economic uneasiness in the world today, and this is about to lead to an unprecedented economic upheaval worldwide. So, it's amazing what's taking place in the world. And it's about attitudes, it's about people, and it's about what takes people and what will finally bring people to repentance. And it doesn't come easy. And most will resist it anyway. I'm going to read some articles that have to do with the economy and so that you are able to hear things in the news when you hear them and not be dull in your hearing, and that you can be shaken sometimes to the core of your being with soberness of mind and realize where we are and how close things are. This is one from Barron's, and anyone that knows Barron's knows what it is, the kind of paper that it is. It's like an economic, one on the economy having to do with like the Wall Street Journal, similar type of paper. But it says, Barron's here, U.S. will see run on treasuries, hyperinflation. So this particular article from them on January the 5th says, investors in U.S. debt around the world are worryingly near a psychological breaking point that could force a run on the bank against treasuries. If this happens, hyperinflation quickly follows and gold will soar much, much higher from its now record-setting levels, argues a particular author here and a longtime trader, Victor Sperandio, I believe it is, in the latest issue of Barron's. Sperandio, it says, has traded for the top investors, including George Soros. Anyone who believes that the United States faces a comparatively mild 1970-style inflation risk is ignoring history at its own peril. This individual wrote in that weekly paper, it says, unlike normal inflation, which may be attributed to a variety of factors, hyperinflation has a single cause. It occurs when a government cannot borrow money because its debt has risen so much that investors believe they will never be paid back with close to the same purchasing power. And that's a powerful statement by someone of this kind of reputation and what he's saying, because that's exactly what's taking place, and that's exactly where governments are. And that's exactly why China is doing some of the things it's doing. It's trying to maneuver itself because it holds so much anyway. In 2009, the author notes, the deficit was 44% of spending. It happened again in 2010. U.S. debt is now more than $13.7 trillion, not counting state and agency debts, which is, that's another story. And deficits are running $1 trillion a year. On down in the article, it says, a nation needs to inspire a lot of confidence to keep that Ponzi scheme alive, Sperandio writes. Unfortunately, markets know that the U.S. government will print money to meet expenses when necessary. The key is the gap between the rate paid investors to own treasury debt versus the inflation rate. If that narrows by too much, there is no longer any compelling reason to hold the debt. Foreign investors then dump U.S. bonds in a rush not to be holding the bag. Down a little bit farther in the same article, meanwhile, a retiring member of the policy committee of China's central bank has reiterated his call for China to cut its holdings in U.S. treasuries in order to minimize losses on its foreign denominated exchange reserves. According to press reports, this individual made a renewed call to dump U.S. debt and move the yuan toward market-driven exchange rates in an opinion page in the Caixing magazine. And going on, it says, allowing the yuan to float would help China wind down its massive dollar asset holding. China should strive to reduce instead of further increasing its holdings of dollar assets, he said. Specifically, China should reduce the growth on its foreign exchange reserves as soon as possible. And it says, as recently as July, says he called for Beijing to sell off U.S. treasuries. He believes that continued U.S. fiscal measures to stave off recession will ultimately weaken the dollar, causing China's estimated $2.65 trillion in dollar holdings to quickly lose value. May not mean a lot to people. I know it's kind of, some of this stuff is maybe not that interesting, but that's a powerful thing, what China's doing right now. It should remind you of a scripture in Revelation when it talks about a time when their solution and their answer is war. Because it has to be close to the end when Jesus Christ returns, and you have to back away from that a year, a month, and a day. And we're not too far from some period in time. It may have already happened because we don't know when China is going to do what it does. But the farther to the end that period of time goes, but at some point, they make a decision because they are to a point where they know that there is no other way out of this for them as far as how they think and how they plan for their future and what they're planning for the world, that their only answer to that is a war. And they understand it'll be a world war. They're not stupid. That's why they have all the... If you listen, if you hear all the things they're doing with their military, why they're building up their forces in the oceans, and why they're taking now the things that they're even... What was it? This past year here, they have loaned out more money to developing countries than the IMF. That's startling. More money. Why? Planning for the future. They're using the money to their advantage, and they're taking the place of what the United States used to do. We don't do that like that anymore in the same way. Even though we're behind that tool there, obviously, but the point being is that people will look to China and their allegiances and how they think. So they're trying to get a wedge in there somehow to have a greater influence over people. I want to read a few more articles here before we close because they tie in together. This one about Euro has a 1 in 5 chance of lasting the decade. UK think tank. This is from London Reuters at the end of the year. I'll get it out. The Euro currency area, it says, has only a 1 in 5 chance of surviving in its current form over the next 10 years because of competitive imbalances between its members, a leading British think tank said on Friday. The Center for Economic and Business Research said Spain and Italy, it said, would have to refinance over 400 billion euros, that's $530 billion, of bonds in the spring, potentially sparking a fresh crisis within the 16-nation euro area. Well, it's just something that's going to break up 16 nations because we know when it's all said and done, they're going to be 10. What brings them to that point? It's about money. It's about Babylon. Incredible. And how everybody seeks to survive in their own way and all the confusion that's out there. Going on, it says, sovereign debt crisis in Greece and Ireland have rocked Euro nations this year, leading some commentators to speculate that Germany could eventually lose patience with bailing out more of the neighbors, triggering a split in the currency block. Another section down here says, the euro is the foundation of our prosperity. This is from Angela Merkel, Chancellor. She says, the euro is the foundation of our prosperity. Germany needs Europe and our common currency for our own well-being. It's about them. We have things about us. China has things about them, and we don't get along. We don't mix. For our own well-being, and in order to overcome great worldwide challenges, we Germans assume our responsibility, even when it sometimes is very hard. And she's receiving a lot of respect for this. She's willing to do something that we're not. She's willing to do something in her government that this country isn't willing to do. Going on here toward the end of the article, it says, trying to figure out who this one individual was. Anyway, this one of these individuals with this think tank said, we give it only a 1 in 5 chance of surviving in its present form for 10 years. If the euro doesn't break up, this could be the year when it weakens substantially toward parity with a dollar, he added. Yeah. Blind, blind, blind. Next one here. Next article. China backs Europe. Euro for investment. Central bank deputy governor says. So all these things just fit together. There's just one after another of a flow that's taking place in the world, and this has to do with the economy and what's leading to our downfall, or the downfall of the dollar, if you will. Europe and the euro will remain among the most important areas of investment for China's world record $2.65 trillion of foreign exchange reserves. Amazing. A central bank official said in the nation's latest show of support. Going on, it says, the euro and the European financial markets are an important part of the global financial system and are, and will be one of the most important investment areas for China's foreign exchange reserve, said Deputy Governor Yi Gang in a statement to the central bank's website. China's statements of support have included Vice Premier, I'll never get this one out, Li Qingquang, this week expressing confidence in Spain's financial markets and pledging more purchases of the national debt. And backing European economies, China, and think about China, what they're doing. They're backing away from the United States and they're looking at Europe, but they have no idea what's getting ready to take place, when they will become enemies because of what's going to happen to the U.S. So people don't understand because they have rejected God and don't understand what God's doing anyway, what God said is going to come to pass. And here they are buttering up to trying to get closer to Europe because they are receiving more from Europe right now than they are from the United States to their benefit. So it goes on to say here that this individual said this week expressing confidence in Spain's financial markets and pledging more purchases of the nation's debt. In backing European economies, China may help to prop up demand in the region that is its biggest market for exports and also the value of its euro-dominated assets. Amazing what's taking place. Bloomberg, another article right behind these. Merkel makes euro indispensable, turning crisis into opportunity, is the headline here from Bloomberg. Chancellor Angela Merkel is turning Europe's sovereign debt crisis into an opportunity to reshape the euro region in Germany's image. Some of these things that come out sometimes, it's just like prophecy, just screaming out at you. Germany, what has Germany always done? What is Germany trying to do now? As Spain raises its retirement age, Greece cuts wages, and Portugal imposes the deepest spending reductions in more than three decades, Merkel's resolve is refusing to aid neighbors unconditionally is showing signs of working. Seeking to erase debts that the markets can snuff out, the 12-year-old euro, which she has called the uniting idea of post-World War II Europe, the 56-year-old scientist who grew up in communist East Germany is set to... Even these things here are interesting. What formed her thinking? How does she think the way that she does? How does she have the kind of influence she does in Europe, in Germany? Grew up in communist East Germany, is set to swap stick for carrot and throw the weight of Europe's largest and richest economy behind a plan to bolster the area's rescue effort. Farther down in the article, EU summit. Merkel and counterparts from 27 member European Union met in Brussels today to review progress on the package, and this is... on the 5th, February the 5th, today to review progress on a package they aim to finish by late March and which may include an increase in the bailout funds firepower, a reduction in interest rates on rescue loans, and deeper coordination of economic policies. Her task is twofold: protect a single currency she views as indispensable and shift the euro region toward the model of a fiscally virtuous, hard money, stable growth economy that underpinned Germany's post-war recovery. In other words, they're really ready to roll up their sleeves and work at it, unlike the United States. Because we have to do some really tough things if we want to turn the tide, and we're not willing to do it. Still, as Europe prepared to bail out Ireland in November, Merkel's appeal to her skeptical electorate focused on the euro as a symbol of peace. Amazing. The euro as a symbol of peace to a nation ravaged by two world wars. And I want to read some more about what she had to say. It says, the euro is about everything. If the euro fails, then Europe fails. The European idea of common values and unity will fail, Merkel said in a November 15th speech to members of her party in Karlsruhe, Germany. This idea has always given us strength in the face of wars and destruction in Europe for the past centuries, to fight for peace, for prosperity, and the freedom of our continent. Sometimes they just fought in a different way. A little bit tongue-in-cheek there, but amazing how people think sometimes and what they're willing to do. Because she is determined, and the German people are determined, and it's in their mind to do what they're going to do before this is over with. Because they're not going to back down. They're not going to lose what they've been working to build for so long. Now Merkel, it says, who gained a degree in physics from Karl Marx University in Leipzig and a doctorate in quantum chemistry from the Central Institute of Physical Chemistry in East Berlin, is seeking a payoff from a year of crisis fighting and providing the biggest share of a 1 trillion euro region bailout package. And went on to talk about how she's a fluent speaker in Russian and English. You know, she's quite a gal. She's smart. She's very shrewd. Incredible woman. She really is. The right person at the right time to do some incredible things. Going on down in the article. Indebtedness is the biggest danger for prosperity on this continent, Merkel told the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland. On January the 28th, any country that gets aid must receive this solidarity under certain conditions. Tighter control of national finance tops Germany's list of demands. Narrowing Europe-wide differences in taxes and pay and retirement age is also on the agenda, driven by Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy, a convert to her lobbying. And this is this quote, I have to read this, what he had to say. Mrs. Merkel and I will never, do you hear me, never let the euro fail. That's what he said in Davos, Switzerland. It's important because there are people in some of the scattered church who do not believe that France or Belgium or some other countries could be a part of a 10-nation combine at the end time. Instead, they think it has to be some farther to the east, and that there had to be like these two legs that came from Dr. Stavronides, who talked about five toes in different areas here because they're on different legs, and some have to be in that eastern block and some have to be in the western block. But what if they were standing in the wrong place? Anyway, when you look at a statue, he wasn't far enough to the west, because some of those nations that have the power are a part of the scattered nations of Israel as well. And France has been a part of it in the past, and they can easily be a part again. Just like Luxembourg, and just like Belgium, and some of the others. And to top it all off, I wanted to read this one here too. Some may be important to others, it's not. But, and a lot of this may not be important to a lot of you, because things with the economy, things to do with the euro and the dollar is not interesting, and I understand that. But try. But try, because it's a part of some awesome things that are taking place at the end time. And candidly, that's what gives a great deal of power to Babylon. Powered by exports, Germany had its fastest economic expansion in two decades last year, with gross domestic product jumping 3.6%. Unemployment fell to an 18-year low of 7.4% in January, the second lowest among the group of seven economies after Japan, and business confidence reached a record high. The euro is a lot better off than what the West wants to give them credit for, referring to Great Britain and the United States and so forth. And be it known, candidly, the United States is far worse off than Portugal and Spain and Greece. We're far worse off for what we're doing right now. I think I've got time to read one more here. All these tie together. You may not see the tie-in. You go back and listen to it later on if you can take it. Because some things having to do with news and articles, and it's rather difficult sometimes. But it's an awesome thing. If you can have a vision, if you can see, I should say, things that are said prophetically and what's happening in the news day by day by day. Because now we're talking about thunder that for a time there was rather quiet and the world wasn't attuned to it. We were. But right now, it is speeded up. And I hope that you can see that process now where things are overlapping each other and becoming louder and louder. And what's happening right now with the economy is one of the loudest. It truly is. It's far louder than what's happening in Egypt right now. It's far louder in what's taking place and what governments and what people are doing. This article here, it's from CNBC on the 11th of January. The Fed's QE2 traders buying bonds by the billions. Deep inside the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the $600 billion man is fast at work. In his spare government issue office in Lower Manhattan, behind a bank of cubicles and scruffy copy machine, Josh Frost and a band of market specialists are making the Fed's ultimate Wall Street trade. They are buying hundreds of billions of dollars of United States Treasury securities on the open market in a controversial attempt to keep interest rates low and in the process revive the economy. This is the ultimate of insanity. It truly is. It is absolutely insane. To critics, it's a Hail Mary play, an admission that the economy's persistent weakness has all but exhausted the central bank's power and tested the limits of its policy making. Around the world, some warn the unusual strategy will weaken the dollar and lead to crippling inflation. But inside the operations room on the ninth floor of the New York Fed's fortress-like headquarters, there is no time for second guessing. Here, the second round of what is known as quantitative easing, QE2. Now, we didn't read the rest of Revelation there, but it talks about the merchants and those in the ships and so forth, and it's because of what they trust in, and we'll hit that next week there, but it's like this great ship on the sea, on the waters, on the ocean, and what is taking place, and that's what the QE2 reminds me of. There's a ship called it. Has to do with Queen Elizabeth II. Anyway, it says it is called on, as it's called on Wall Street, is being put into practice almost daily by the central bank's powerful New York arm. Each morning, Mr. Frost and his team face a formidable task. They must try to buy treasuries at the best possible price for the savviest bond traders in the business. I don't even know how something like this is even legal. How in the world we could be in such a position. The smallest miscalculation, a few one-hundredths of a percentage point here or there, could unsettle the markets and cost taxpayers dearly. It could also embolden critics at home and abroad who say QE2 represents a dangerous expansion of the Fed's role in the markets. We are looking to get the best price we can for the taxpayer. Insanity, said Mr. Frost. Whether Mr. Frost will reach the goal is uncertain. What is sure is that market interest rates have risen rather than fallen since the Fed embarked on the program in November. That is the opposite of what was supposed to happen, although rates might have been even higher without the Fed program. Mr. Frost asked to avoid paying top dollars for bonds that could be worthless when the Fed tries to sell them one day. What a task. Anyway, we'll stop there for today. It's a crazy, crazy world we live in, and you see some crazy, crazy things out here, but there are people and there are nations out here that aren't blind, they're not foolish, and they're not stupid. And that's why they're pulling away more and more from us, and at some point they have to make a decision. When do we have to do what we have to do in order to save ourselves? So with that, we'll close for today.